Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. It is the Herd in Los Angeles. Sunny day again in Los Angeles. Live. The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Joy is almost over completely. The Tylenol heavy in a haze because of a dentist appointment on Monday.
So I have Invisalign.
Yeah.
And I got a procedure done
that's
supposed to accelerate the teeth movement.
And it's a lot of work.
And, yeah, listen, you know, beauty is an investment.
Yes. I know it.
What better investment than yourself, you know? it's almost healed. It's like, you know when you do something and your teeth are, like, sore? So
yeah.
It hurts to chew?
Yeah. It's one of those.
Yeah. But I'm doing good.
All right. Well, it's beat up on Bill Belichick week. I've often said that about social media. Nobody has the actual courage to go at the tsunami or the avalanche. They just jump on board and bury people. So this week we beat up on Belichick because he's no good. And Tom Brady won the divorce. And we all kind of know quarterbacks, if they're great, are more valuable than coaches. Pete Carroll got fired a bunch of times. Then he got Russell Wilson. And now Pete Carroll's going to be a Hall of Famer. That is not to say Pete Carroll doesn't matter. But Mike Tomlin won a lot more games when Big Ben wasn't wobbling all over the field like an old man. And Sean Payton won a Super Bowl when Drew Brees was closer to his prime than at the end. We know that quarterbacks matter more than coaches. You know, what's the split? 60-40, 70-30, whatevs. But it's beat up on Belichick week because Brady's had so much enormous success. But it should be noted, Bill's the best football coach ever. Ask his peers. Ask Sean McVay. Ask Mike or Kyle Shanahan. Ask Parcells. Ask Jimmy Johnson, I have multiple times. Ask Tom Brady. Just think about this. Think about dynasties. In a sport where the average player lasts 4 to 4.5 years. So dynasties are hard in football because guys get hurt. Vince Lombardi's was 7 years, 60 to 67. Bill Walsh, 7 years. Chuck Knoll, 7 years. Belichick's like, bruh, triple it. But that's all Brady. We know that's not true. Here's six things to remember in Beat Up Bill Belichick week about the greatest football coach of all time. Number one, he drafted him. Nobody else did. Bill saw it and drafted him. Number two, he identified very early, read the books on Belichick, Brady's willfulness, his work ethic, his leadership. Number three, he didn't rush Tom Brady. Look at the Jets right now. He slowly, smartly built around Brady. Number four, he equipped him throughout his career with Moss, Welker, Edelman. And you know what all of them came at? Under market value. He didn't have to break up the team to get Moss or Gronk or Welker or Edelman. Either they got him in good trades that benefited Brady. They didn't have to give up an offensive lineman and draft picks to get him. Here's another thing Bill did in Beat Up on Bill Belichick week. He hired brilliant coordinators. Brady never had a miss at coordinator. Every great quarterback, I mean, Troy Aikman got stuck with Barry Switzer. Aaron Rodgers got stuck with McCarthy. Brady never even got a bad coordinator in New England. And oh yeah, this matters sort of. In the biggest games, Bill Belichick often outcoached, outsmarted, outdueled great coaches. McVay, Tomlin, Pete Carroll, Dungy, Hall of Fame guys, out-schemed him. Tom didn't have to compensate for his coach. Outperform. Tom's never thrown a first quarter touchdown in the Super Bowl. He's never needed to. He never had to play with a huge league. You know, I've said this about presidents. You never get credit for the chaos you avoid. Didn't have any. There was no chaos for 20 years. I mean, Garoppolo, not really chaos. I mean, you're going to write books and there's going to be disagreements. New England had no, I mean, Deflategate, that's league imposed, Spygate, but didn't really affect Brady's performance. Brady was a better quarterback, look it up, after Deflategate than before it. You don't get credit for the chaos. They didn't have chaos at coordinator. They didn't give up the farm to get Randy Moss or a Wes Welker. They always got the right coach. They always had the best offensive line. They always had a top 10 defense. I love Brady. He's connected to my brand because I talked about him almost every day for 20 years. But Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, and Russell Wilson would all have more Super Bowls if Belichick was their coach. And Aaron has told people privately that. Peyton Manning probably has. Russell Wilson knows it. I'm not saying they'd have as many as Tommy, but they'd have more. You don't think Aaron Rodgers would have more Super Bowls than Belichick? You're out of your gourd. That defense, Aaron's had one great defense in his career. He won a Super Bowl. Peyton Manning's first Colts win. It was his best defense. Ask Bill Polian. So you can beat up on Belichick all you want. He tripled Lombardi, Walsh, Knoll. Tripled them in a sport, by the way, of player empowerment. Bill was so smart that he got players to take pay cuts. Like in the NBA, injuries rarely end your career. Baseball, not that much. Football happens every day. And Bill got all these players through the years, just take less. What? Football player take less? He got the greatest, in fact, greatest football player to take less for over a decade. Yeah. You keep beating up on him. I think he's pretty good. By the way, here's Belichick. Here's Belichick saying nice stuff about Tom Brady yesterday.
Morning. What's going on? Got any stories this week? Yeah, no, nothing Tom does surprises me. He's a great player. Works hard, takes care of himself. I mean, he's talking about playing till 50. I mean, if anybody can do it, he probably can. And Tom's had an unbelievable career. I mean, you can't, there's not enough superlatives and adjectives to compliment him on everything that he's achieved and continues to achieve. So, yeah, it's unbelievably impressive.
We don't buy Belichick jerseys. We're always more in line with worshiping the player than the coach. That guy over that shoulder you're watching on TV right there, he's the best ever. All right. A lot of rookie quarterbacks are playing. There is one that is not. Trey Lance. And he's the only rookie quarterback everybody still loves. I'm hearing people snipe at Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, and Mac Jones. Woo! Last weekend was bad. It was embarrassing. And the one quarterback, the rookie, that we're all like, whoo, Trey Lance, touchdown pass, touchdown run, he's not playing. Kyle Shanahan talked about, we don't have a quarterback controversy. My young guy's not ready to play. My veteran's pretty good. Here's Kyle Shanahan.
There's not a quarterback battle right now. I mean, we're going with our starting quarterback, who I think is playing very well. Happy that he is, so Trey is not thrown into any situations he has to do too early. If he ever is thrown into that, then I know Trey will deal with that and he'll get better as it goes, but that's not. We have a luxury where we don't have to do that yet to Trey or to our team. So hopefully we won't have to.
This is something I think is important, even in my career and perhaps yours. Ugly losses leave shrapnel. They don't just end when the game ends. People talk about them. They stew about them. They get embedded in your head. You start doubting teammates, doubting coordinators, doubting people. That Justin Fields loss was so ugly. You question the coach. You question the playbook. You question the general manager. I'm reading Jet fans who a month ago were hailing Robert Saleh as Elon Musk with a playbook. Now I read, is he over his head? Their coordinator has got to go. You know, Joe Douglas, how many years do you get with this offensive line? Owners all say they're patient. In the history of the league, there's never been a single patient NFL owner. Oh, my bad, there is one, the Packers, because they don't actually have one. Playing a rookie and having him unravel is going to create chaos. Because an impatient billionaire upstairs is going to get bad press about that baby he owns, and he's going to question, you know, all these billionaires have one thing in common, egos, and they don't like to be embarrassed, and the Jets just got shut out, and Trevor Lawrence like is throwing bad picks, and Justin Fields, and oh my God, my coach, and my, it tears at the fabric of the building. How do you think that flight home was for the Jets last week? How do you think practice was Tuesday for the Bears? Even in my business, I see networks, one I used to work for, make this mistake. They find young talent and give them their own show, and then it doesn't work, and the young talent leaves because you put way too much on their table. Instead of finding a young talent, grooming them, making them a 3 for 2 years and then a 2 for 4 years, and then maybe they get their show, and there's this winning over and over. Not overwhelmed, not giving them this, not giving them that. It's the slow build, the slow momentum. Losses do not end when the game ends. Billionaires start questioning their coordinators and coaches, and coaches now have pressure. They coach differently, and Matt Nagy right now is blaming himself. We're all blaming the GM. Here's what we all know about young quarterbacks. They can't overcome chaos unless you're Andrew Luck. It was like one a decade, okay? So they can't overcome. Even Justin Herbert's great. Couldn't win last year. Offensive line coaching. So how do you avoid chaos? Keeping the same coach and the same playbook and the same coordinator and the same GM and the same voice and the same system, which doesn't happen when you go 2-14. If the Jets go 17 games now, 2-15, the coordinator's getting fired. Zach Wilson, second year, new playbook. Hard enough going up against Brian Flores, going up against Bill Belichick, Sean McDermott. Up, second year, new playbook. Guarantee you the coordinator's getting fired. Offensive coordinator's out. By the way, Matt Nagy, who wanted to play Dalton Fields pressure, he probably going to be out too. And that means Justin Fields on his second coach, second system. Now, sometimes it worked. Goff got McVay over Jeff Fisher. But a lot of times it doesn't. You and I all know this. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but what's the percentage of head coaches hired that are hits? I'm guessing 50%. I have no idea, but it feels lower than that. It feels like the great coaches in the league, 7 of the top 8 outside like McVay, have been around forever, meaning most of the new coaches don't work. They get fired. So the only quarterback, this thing about this idea that just, you know what, it's about the future, nonsense. It's about winning today. Because those flights home and those practices and people start protecting their careers and they start picking sides in locker rooms and coordinators start looking, working on their resume 13 games into a season because they know they're in trouble and they all read the papers and the talk radio and people are talking and winning matters. And the only quarterback today we still think 100% highly of is the one that's not playing or plays infrequently. In fact, he had a play the other night, ran around, threw it in the dirt. So what? We still love him. It does matter. And I do think owners always say they're patient. Billionaires aren't patient. None of them, ever. Packers have the only patient owner, the fans. I mean, that's it. In the history of the NFL. I've been told that by coaches. I've been told that by GMs. No billionaire wants to get embarrassed. Last week, the Jets were embarrassed. Be very careful about putting young people in spaces where it's virtually impossible for them to succeed. I've seen it in my space, my career. Slow, steady, lack of chaos, from a number 3 to a number 2 to a number 1, almost always is the right answer. Almost always.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So the media doesn't have a great deal of courage. They like to jump on the avalanche. And so when Joe Judge had kind of a funny line yesterday at a press conference, the media attacked Joe Judge because Joe Judge is now losing football games. Bill Belichick said the exact same thing 3 years ago. Crickets from all the media tough guys. So Joe Judge was talking about analytics, and here we go.
If you kind of look back to a lot of decisions I made as head coach, I'm not afraid to go for it on fourth down. The analytics is just a tool. It's nice to look at the numbers and how they go through the flow of the game, but the analytics changes based on the opponent, based on who you have available for the game, and how the flow of the game is going, too. You can look at a stat sheet all you want. I promise you, if XL was going to win football games, Bill Gates would be killing it right now, okay? But, you know, you've got to take those numbers as a tool, and then you've got to go ahead and factor into how your team's playing at the time and what the opponent has as well.
He's 100% right. I probably wouldn't have used the line because I know how the media works. They have no courage. So everybody beats up on the losing coach. Bill Belichick, 2 years ago, he puts less than zero stock into the analytics during Patriots games. Crickets from all the tough guys in the media. Not a word. Here's a classic example of the media wanting analytics to be important. The media want, especially print guys, don't make much money. They want to feel smarter than everybody. Per a September 2020 survey conducted by ESPN's Seth Walter, he conducted it. Six of the 12 playoff teams from 2019 were voted among the 10 most analytically advanced organizations. Oh, six of 12. That means six of 12 also didn't use analytics. Sorry, Seth. Doesn't prove anything. It proves you can, you can't. You know what wins in this league? Tough guys. Great quarterbacks. Mike McCarthy won a Super Bowl. Okay, had a great quarterback. Pete Carroll couldn't win games until he had a great quarterback. Belichick now can't win games because he didn't have a great quarterback. It's kind of the sport. If the Giants had won two of the three games they've played and they led all of them with seconds to play, if they'd won all three, Joe Judge would be 8-3 in his last 11 games. Now, with Daniel Jones, analytics, first of all, I'm in no hurry for them to take over the NFL. They've ruined baseball. It's all launch angles and exit velocity and all these nerds now. There's no base runners in activity. And basketball's all three-point shots. I used to like mid-range jumpers, and I liked Lou Brock and Joe Morgan and cat-and-mouse game and singles and doubles. That's the first thing. Second thing, when you win, you can say anything and nobody cares. By the way, I've always believed analytics are something I would look at. I think they're based on volume. Over the course of regular seasons and volume, analytics are very crucial. But when you get to the postseason in all these sports, the umpiring changes, the officiating changes. Let's take the NBA. NBA is all in on analytics. The last three champions, Bucks, Raptors, Lakers, they all had two things in common, not shooting threes. They were all big, tough, physical teams that played great defense. Two of them didn't shoot threes. One, the Bucks did pretty well, but their best player can't shoot at all. But they're tough. Basketball analytics. Why is James Harden great in the regular season and a flame out in the postseason? Because analytics don't transcend to the postseason. Prime example. What happens in every basketball postseason? Refs swallow the whistle. So the game is officiated differently. Who's that given advantage to? Tough, physical men. That's why all the cool regular season stories with the young teams, they all lose wrestling matches once you get to the playoffs. So the refs officiate different. Coaches in basketball playoffs coach different. They shrink. Guys that were playing Tuesday night in Denver in January don't see the floor. So the coaches coach different. The refs ref different. Veteran players, we all know this, play harder when there's situational urgency. So go look at the NBA playoffs. The analytic team, what about the Warriors? Well, they had the three greatest shooters in the history of basketball. You didn't. They did. And even they had issues in the postseason, often against very physical teams. So the analytics are great for volume. But in baseball playoffs, I mean, you'll literally have Clayton Kershaw pitch one night. 2 nights later, you would consider using Kershaw out of the bullpen. You don't do that in May against the Reds. But you do it in October against the Yankees or against the Cubs or the Brewers or the Astros in a playoff game. You manage different in baseball in the playoffs. You have Verlander, bring him out of the pen. He pitched 2 nights ago. It's game six. In the NBA, you coach differently. Refs swallow a whistle. And in the NFL, Belichick experiments all the time in September. He doesn't in January. Running backs who got touches in the fall don't make the roster in December. They're a DNP. They're not in the game plan. So I like analytics. But the idea that 6 of 12 teams in 2019 that made the playoffs did analytics, that means 6 of 12 didn't. And nobody pushed back on Belichick because he was winning. Joe Judge is good. I believe he is. But when you have a young quarterback and a coordinator, Jason Garrett, who's pretty conservative, and a bad O-line, you lose close games. If he had Justin Herbert, he's probably 3-0 this year. If he had a little better line, like the Chargers with Herbert do, he'd probably win games in Kansas City, not lose games to Atlanta. Analytics, I like analytics. But this rush to them that they're the Bible, look at what postseason baseball, postseason basketball is. The umpiring changes, the rosters shrink, the staffs, the pitching staff shrink, the games change. So regular season analytics can't be treated as the be-all, end-all. They need to be viewed and watched, but understood with some skepticism. They're not the answer to everything, especially when the games count the most.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Football, you can grow into greatness. It doesn't happen a lot in basketball and, say, soccer. In basketball, you could be in a gym with a ball shooting by yourself. Ball skills, vertical, athleticism, and I could look and determine you're really, really an elite basketball prospect, right? In football, Tom Brady's not thrown to himself in the yard. Left tackles are not blocking air and impressing you. Is that there's a certain physicality with football that you have to see guys hit guys and how they can handle it. Yeah, same in UFC, same in boxing. Everybody can look good in the gym. Let me see you against another dude. And basketball and soccer are different. You can identify basketball greatness and soccer greatness very, very quickly. Most of your stars, 12, 13 years old, you see it in tennis. There are certain sports you can identify it very quickly. It's harder in football. Very few NBA stars developed into stars. Gary Payton's one of the few that people didn't know after the first couple years if he could play, and then he became an all-time great. That's a rarity. I mean, even the kids out of high school like LeBron and Kevin Garnett, you knew by the end of their first year, beginning of their second, you're like, all right, this is different. These guys are going to be great players. Doesn't mean you're winning championships. I mean, Garnett was on bad teams, but you knew he was great. But with Dak Prescott, I was a skeptic. Even his college coach, Dan Mullen, came on this show and said, yeah, first view of Dak Prescott is he's not a natural thrower. It's not easy. He said he never was at Mississippi State. And I was an early critic on Dak. But is he growing into greatness? Now, I don't want to overreact to beating a bad Eagles team. I've said this. The Cowboys look faster defensively, but Dak is 11-1 his last 12 games. Against the NFC East. Washington in a rebuild, Giants in a rebuild, Eagles in a rebuild. But he does look, I think, better now, year two McCarthy. I do think Dak is growing to a better place, and Matt Rhule, coach of Carolina, knows a thing or two about quarterbacks and offenses, has been watching film preparing for Dak and the Cowboys and said this.
He's getting the ball out of his hand. You know, he's the second fastest guy in the NFL right now from snap to throw, which is, you know, emblematic or symptomatic, I don't know the right word, of a quarterback who's knows exactly where the ball is going to go versus the defense, who's on the same page with his receivers, who's getting in the right plays versus the right, you know, coverages, who's making sure that he's protected. It all goes back to, it's like watching Peyton Manning, it's like watching Drew Brees, you know, call the game at the line of scrimmage. I think what Dak's doing right now is unbelievably impressive.
Remember, Brady's first pop year, where, like, he was controlling the game, was year 7. Look it up, 2007. That was Brady's first, this is my team. Okay, Brady. I could give you 30 examples of NFL players, often quarterbacks, who grow into something. I mean, Sam Darnold looks like a totally different player now, Sam Darnold, than he did with the Jets. I mean, literally, take the last Jets game and the first three Carolina games. It's like a different player. All the stats are different. No mistakes, more accurate, running the offense, So you can grow into stuff because you are very reliant on coordinators and coaches and your defense. Are you in shootouts? Do you get protection? So we did this game once before. We call it Dis or Dak. You give me the quarterbacks, and my judge is the next 5 years. I consider everything. Next 5 years, because I think I'm viewed as cool on Dak. But I've said before, so much of football for a quarterback is pre-snap and intellect and growing and leadership. And those all get better over time. Nobody pops out of the womb as a great leader. Like, you need opportunities to become a great leader to illustrate to me you are a great leader. How do I know if you've never been put in leadership positions? So we'll play Dis or Dak 5 years from today. Would I take Dak or Dis, the other guy? So here we go.
Dak Prescott or Patrick Mahomes?
Okay, that would be one of the easier ones. I would take Patrick Mahomes. That's an easier one because I think he's just a generational talent. Arm movement. I think most people, even Dak fans, would probably agree.
Dak Prescott or Baker Mayfield?
I would take Dak. I think he's a bigger, sturdier body. I think he's more mature. I like a lot of intangibles. Yeah, I don't think that's a criticism of Baker, but I would take Dak for 5 years. There are things that I align with Dak. I'm into the intangible stuff more than most fans. I would take Dak.
Dak Prescott or Sam Darnold?
Dak Prescott. Yeah, Dak is a less reckless player. I don't think either has a beautiful throwing motion. I don't think either are artistic throwers of the football. But I think with Dak, I get more consistent accuracy. I get many of the intangibles I like about Darnold, but I don't think Dak plays quite as recklessly. I think he really almost always, he'll kill a play and be fine with it. And yeah. I think that's growth. And I haven't seen Darnold do that yet.
Dak Prescott or Justin Herbert?
Well, again, this is closer than people would think. I would say Herbert because I think from what I've seen in year two, he just keeps getting better and better. But he had a terrible red zone interception against the Cowboys. So I am going on this morning, Dak. This morning, Dak probably does stuff pre-snap better than Justin Herbert. But in 5 years, I think you'll start seeing a separation here, probably end of this year or beginning of next year, because I do think Herbert now has the protection he deserves. So over 5 years, Dak may be better for a year. I believe that. But if it's five, I think Herbert for 3.5 will start to pull away.
Dak Prescott or Joe Burrow?
Very close. Dak by an inch. I haven't seen a ton of Burrow. I like his situational awareness. But Burrow, we saw this 2 weeks ago, still has those games where you're like, cover your eyes, this is awful. Dak's out of that space. So Dak's floor is much higher right now than Burrow's, although I think Burrow as a natural thrower is better, but I would take Dak over the next five.
Dak Prescott or Derek Carr?
Probably Dak by an inch. By an inch. Okay, now again, here's why, and I think it's very close. Derek's a better thrower of the football, a natural thrower. Dak has a sort of innate confidence that
doesn't need to be fueled by other people.
I think Derek sometimes a little bit needs support, he's a little more needy in terms of, I need this. Dak is the quarterback of the Cowboys, went through an anthem controversy, didn't care. I mean, that was a big deal, right? Like, he didn't care. The kneeling stuff, Dak was willing to forge ahead without necessarily even the support of the city he played in, and it didn't in any way shrink him. So by an inch, Dak.
Josh Allen.
Josh Allen. I think he's different. Bigger, stronger, more mobile, ridiculous arm. I don't get the critics. There are critics out there. I don't get it. Listen, I said when he got drafted, he's wild. Like, he's the wild pony in the barn that's knocking everything over. But when he has the right coaching, his ceiling is, his floor sometimes is lower. He has bad throws. His ceiling is higher than Mahomes. He's that good.
Dak Prescott or Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, Dak. Dak doesn't shrink in big spots.
Dak Prescott or Matthew Stafford?
Matt. Now, I would say Matt. Matt, again, Matt is such a natural. I mean, you're seeing it in three games. It's so easy. he's just such an easy thrower of the football. I mean, there's Mel Kiper told me Matt Stafford is the only high schooler he's seen who would be drafted out of high school as a quarterback. Now, you would have put him on the scout team,
right?
But he was that gifted. I think it was like South Lake High in Dallas. He was you know, Kershaw's buddy in high school. He's that gifted.
Dak Prescott or Kyler Murray?
You're going to think I'm crazy. Dak Prescott by an inch, and I'll tell you why. I don't know about Kyler's leadership skills. I hear things that are very interesting from players in the league that Kyler is a one-on-one talent, but again, Kyler throws a more beautiful football. Kyler is more brilliant as a playmaker. 5 years, Dak is beloved by every single person in that organization. Kyler isn't.
Kyler's not?
Kyler has his critics even in the locker room. Hmm. That's why they went out and got J.J. Watt and A.J. Green. They wanted veteran leadership, which I think they have questioned whether or not Kyler is that, and I think that's underrated.
Dak Prescott or Russell Wilson?
Russell. Russell, to me, is a better version of Kyler. Just simply put, I think Russell, again, it doesn't – I don't think we've ever seen anybody quite right like Russell. I think Kyler's the closest part of it, but I don't think he's Russell. Top to bottom, leadership, pre-snap, teamwork, optimism, hope, health. I mean, Kyler already got hurt last year. Russell Wilson's been playing this game for 20 years, going back to when he was a little kid. He's never been hurt. He never gets hurt. Kyler's already gotten hurt in year two.
This will be an interesting one. Dak Prescott or Aaron Rodgers next 5 years?
Dak. Because now that Aaron's a better player. But the minute Aaron said 50-50 on retirement, I have no idea what's going on. If I told you publicly, I announced I'm 50-50 on quitting the show, you would literally call your agent.
Yes, I would.
You would call your agent. You would call Eric Shanks. You would call your brother. You would call family members. I got to get my resume ready. When I thought when Aaron said that, it was a huge public mistake. I have no idea where his head is at if they go into a four-game losing streak. I have no idea. It's all fun. He's happy, Aaron, after they beat the Niners. But what if they go on a four-game losing streak? I don't know what I'm getting.
Next 5 years, Dak Prescott or Lamar Jackson?
Oh, can I pass on that one?
No. That's not the rules. I don't know.
I would say, yeah, question mark. Well, Lamar wins 80% of his games, and I think I spend at least an hour a week defending Lamar. Get me to the end of the year.
Okay.
We'll play Diss or Dak one more time, and we'll go to the last weekend of the year. I'd probably this morning give Lamar the edge, but it wouldn't be a huge edge. It would be the Derek Carr Dak. It would be that. It'd be an inch, because I do think he does one thing so well that he doesn't have to do everything well. I feel with Dak, he kind of does everything at a B-plus level.
Yeah.
But with Lamar, I think he does one thing at an A-plus level, and I don't really care about a lot of the other stuff.
He does everything at a B-plus level and A-plus intangibles.
Yes, that is Dak. Whereas Lamar, there are throws he's not great at, but he is so otherworldly in the moving around part that I tend to give guys passes.
Well, I mean, I give Dak a little extra sprinkle of the intangible stuff because it is the Dallas Cowboys, and that is such a unique job to be the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. But all of these guys are like, I mean, we have an incredible
league. Yeah, so prime example.
League.
You never get credit, I said this earlier, for the chaos in life you avoid.
Yes.
You could be a president, a senator, a mom with a family. Do you know how many times we've had potential chaos with the Cowboys in the last 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
The Zeke contract, the anthem stuff, the kneeling stuff. There's never been any chaos. There have been bad games, but Dak doesn't get credit for the chaos with the most outspoken meddling owner, with coaches that can't figure out the clock, with he inherited Dez, who was this kind of volcanic, outspoken. That was a lot of stuff. He replaced Romo.
Yep.
I mean, Dak has never gotten credit for the chaos he keeps you out of, and nobody ever does.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Matt Stafford, we just had Calvin Johnson on. It's amazing what winning does, doesn't it? We didn't pay attention to Matt Stafford for 13 years, and now he is on our show every week. People can't say enough nice things. Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona go to Los Angeles. They face Matt Stafford this week, and here's Kingsbury.
Matthew Stafford's arm talent, you know, being from Texas, I watched him when he was in high school. It's legendary. I mean, he is a freak show at that position, and his skill set's really getting a chance to show in Sean's offense.
Sometimes you have to trust your eyes. So these guys were making fun of me earlier this week because I said when I watched Dallas play, I said this 2 weeks ago, they're faster. I don't know the schemes. They're way faster. They're doing way more man-to-man, not a lot of zone, and that tells me they trust their personnel. They just trust their athletes to match up with your athletes, man-to-man, we can beat you. And then a stat came out yesterday, which I was so excited about, I couldn't contain myself, which is Dallas leads the NFL with takeaways, and they also lead the NFL with 10 different defensive players playing at a speed of 19 miles an hour. And so you trust your eyes. Like, they look faster they are. And the other thing I've been saying about the Rams is when you watch the Rams play, and this again speaks what they think of their personnel. The reason the Cowboys are doing more man-to-man, they trust their dudes. When you play zone, you don't. And with the Rams, there's no more tricks. They just drop back to pass. And that tells you the Goff offense was deception-based. Play action. Well, a stat came out this morning, next-gen stats. What do you know? Sean McVay has utilized more spread, less play action with Matt Stafford. They're down to 25% of their passes are play action. So 75% of the time, drop back and throw it. And that is a much lower number than it was with Jared Goff. And so whenever you see tricks and deception, that means you don't trust your personnel. Matt Nagy with Trubisky. What did I say for years? It's just smoke and mirrors. McVay with Goff. You started seeing it was all deception. And once they couldn't fool people like Belichick, the offense was bad. And you see this with the 49ers. That is one of my concerns with Garoppolo. It's at its best when you're fooled. Where's the play going? A lot of bootleg stuff. And I think Garoppolo, that's why when he had that great drive against Green Bay, I'm like, that's real quarterback play. You don't see a lot of that from Garoppolo. That's real quarterback play. It's a lot of tricks, which can tell you, your coach will tell you, the fans, what he thinks of the personnel. If they play a lot of zone defense, they don't like their corners. If they do a lot of tricks, they have questions about the quarterback. By the way, Buffalo and the Chargers with Josh Allen and Justin Herbert, seven-step drop, let her rip, kid. They trust their players. And there's always a ceiling when you have to do tricks. You know, aging Drew Brees, a little bit of deception for Sean Payton, there's a ceiling. Shanahan, Garoppolo, there's a ceiling. McVay, Goff. So, Andy Reid, by the way, with Alex Smith, there is a ceiling to the tricks. You can fool people. That's not the question. But when you watch the Rams now, the yards are truer. It's not garbage time yards. It's straight drops, middle of the game, big plays. Here comes the pass rush, and Matt Stafford connects. Andrew Whitworth talked about this earlier this week on our show.
I think we're a team now that we're kind of just dropping back with the quarterback and letting him be special like he is. And up front, you know what, it's a different thing. Now we're you know, really working on pass protection and having the ability to give him time and the chance to make those plays. And that part of the, you know, really for us offensively has been the biggest, you know, bright spot for us, is that we started this season protecting the quarterback, letting him make plays and showing the talent and ability he has. And I think really the relationship between Sean and him is really showing up as they're able to kind of pull on each other and ideas and philosophies for how to attack defenses. And so far, it's showed up really in our passing game.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
42 years NFL films, usually an hour or two. Today, an hour or three. I'm so excited for Greg Cosell because I have so many legitimate questions. He joins us now live. So I was saying with Matt Stafford in the Rams is that there's fewer tricks, there's fewer deception, there's less play action. There is a lot more, my eyes tell me, a lot more straight drop and let her go. We got a lot of good receivers. And I looked up a next-gen stat today, and they are doing...
All right, let's hear it.
Yeah, they're doing... They went from 33% play action to 24, 25. So they're doing a little less play action stuff and more throwing it with Matt. What do you first of all, what do you make against with Stafford and Tampa, and what do you make about that stat?
Well, it's interesting you mention that, because one of the things that's really stood out watching the tape, which of course can't have play action, is they lead the NFL in empty sets through three games. They're putting Stafford in empty sets. Sometimes, as they did this week against Tampa, they go with four receivers to one side, very difficult to defend. So it's a four-by-one set. But what empty sets do, everybody immediately says, well, it makes the defense declare before the snap. That's one thing it does for sure. But also, defenses will play empty sets in certain ways. You know what you're going to get. There's a tendency predictability of coverage when you line up in empty sets. And Stafford, and this is not talked about a lot, Colin, but Stafford is incredibly smart. And so when you get a tendency predictability of coverage, then Stafford can go to work. And the route concepts, of course, with Sean McVay are so good, both attacking man coverage with a lot of bunch concepts, attacking zone coverage with two, three, and even four-man route combinations. They're just really, really good with a quarterback now that is just a high-level thrower.
All right, we saw Justin Herbert with a bad O-line not win a bunch of games but set some rookie records. Now we get Justin Herbert with a new coaching system and a very solid offensive line. What does the film say with a young Chargers phenom quarterback?
Well, you know what? It's interesting to me watching Herbert, because he's playing exactly the way most of us thought he was not going to do when he came out of Oregon. Because he's playing with a very refined feel for the timing and rhythm of the passing game. He gets the ball out to the right receiver at the right time. He does not wait in the pocket to see if something downfield develops, unless it's a called downfield throw or a shot play. He almost looks robotic and mechanical at times in a good way, Colin. He plays incredibly efficiently. You know, he's not one of those guys that sits and sits and sits and gets stuck in the pocket. The ball comes out.
Yeah. So Aaron Rodgers, a two-pass drive. It is amazing. It is crazy. He throws off his back foot on every play now, and it's just accepted. It's his own style. I thought Green Bay was the more physical, better team. I thought they should have won. I thought Garoppolo's drive was underrated. We didn't want to talk about that. But let's just talk Aaron against San Francisco. What'd you see you like?
Yeah. You know, I've been doing this a long time, Colin, and maybe I'm jaded sometimes, but he made two throws in that game that, to me, were ridiculous. The 12-yard touchdown he threw to Valdes-Scantling early in the fourth quarter on what we call a double smash route, double smash concept. I mean, it's not just the throw. I don't know how many guys would even think about that as the throw and turn it loose. And it was just an unbelievable throw. Yeah. And then, of course, the first one to start the final game-winning drive. That throw was ridiculous. Another throw, I don't know if there's two other guys in the NFL that would have actually turned that loose. I mean, Fred Warner got incredible depth as an underneath defender, way deeper than you would teach anybody. He missed it by 5 inches, but just making the throw, turning it loose, was unbelievable. You know, he's the last 2 weeks, he's throwing the ball exceptionally well.
Well, so is Josh Allen again after a bumpy first week. Now, there are times that accuracy can be an issue with him. It was at college, it was early, but do you see him reverting back to what you saw in his best moments last year after a bumpy opening week?
Yeah, this game was like last year. Again, you know, this is what we have so far this season. Two games where he struggled with his ball location, and then this past week against Washington where he played like the Allen of 2020, strong mix of pocket efficiency and second reaction playmaking. He was much more precise with his ball placement than he had been in the first two games. It started actually with his first throw of the game, but he's such a strong thrower. You know, he's another guy that he won't always throw with his feet set. I think that's just the way he is. You mentioned that about Rodgers. I think Allen is one of those guys that there are just times he's not going to throw with his feet set. And that's the way he is. But his arm, his talent level, because of his size, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say he's a better thrower than Mahomes or Rodgers, but he's 6'5", 240. And that kind of size is a trait.
Yeah. That's right. Okay, you're probably going to say nice stuff with Kirk Cousins, and he has these games where he's unstoppable, but he drives me nuts because the brighter the lights get, the more he shrinks. But he tore up the Seahawks. You know, where do you land? I mean, let's take the Seahawks game, but where do you land today on Kirk Cousins?
You know, it's a great question. I mean, you know, I don't know Kirk Cousins. I've had people tell me things. I'm not going to go there because that's nothing I know personally, and I would never do that. But when you watch him play within the context of the offense that he's asked to run, he's an extremely efficient player. It's an offense that starts with the run game, predominantly outside zone. They're really good with play action boot. It defines reads for him. It defines throws for him. He's willing to make difficult throws in critical situations. Does he always make them? No, but he's willing to. So there's an efficiency to his game. I don't know what's in his head, so I can't speak to when he gets into the games that, you know, people always say they're big games, you know. So that's a hard thing for me to address. But he's been an extremely efficient player within the context of that offense since he's been there.
Yeah. Yeah, ask Pete Carroll. He carved him up. All right, Justin, that Justin Fields mess, who do we blame? What'd the film say?
Well, you know, all I can tell you is what the tape showed. I don't get into the other stuff. So what they tried to do was they tried to feature quick game throws as the foundation. Quick game throws meaning three-step drops, quick five-step drops, where the ball comes out. There's not a lot of reading involved. It's basically a one-read throw. They wanted to create opportunities for him to get the ball out quick. There are times he did that. There are times he didn't throw it. I know people have said there should have been more play action boot. The first design movement play came on his seventh drop back. Could it have come earlier? Maybe. But after watching that tape, at this point in time, this is not a statement, Colin, about his whole career. We don't know what he will become. At this point in time, he doesn't see things very well. He was locked in on reads. He didn't show any real sense of being able to eliminate what's not there, isolate where he should go. He played both too fast at times and too hesitant at other times. He does not yet have an innate sense and innate feel for what open means in the NFL.
All right. Sam Darnold went from awful to, oh, wow, he's 3-0. I'm a huge fan of Matt Rhule and Joe Brady, where a lot of his throws, people are schemed open. I mean, not everybody's covered. Now, he's made some difficult throws, but I really trust this group of coaches he's surrounded by. Now, Dallas is a much faster defense this year. They found a great, very fast defense. So this is going to be and he didn't have McCaffrey. But just kind of take me through Darnold, Cowboys defense. What do you project happens? What's the tape say?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that about the Cowboys' defense. Much faster, much more active, much more multiple with their front look.
Yes, yes.
They're starting to move around Parsons and Gregory, who are standing up in what we call joker positions, moving around. So they've got some speed, some bend, some quickness. Darnold has improved greatly. They've helped him. You hit it right on the head. The reads are much more defined.
Yes.
The receivers are there for him to throw the ball. I think he's starting to get a little better in the pre-snap phase, noticing fronts, recognizing when he needs to change a protection. You know, he's a great example. You spoke before I came on about these young quarterbacks. He's in his fourth year. You know, it takes time. He's learning. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's now going to be great, Colin. Who knows? But you can see incremental learning along with a system that is helping him with defined reads and throws.
Yep. All right, Joe Burrow's on TV tonight. That means I'll be watching. Burrow against Trevor Lawrence. I'm going to take Joe.
Yeah.
I'm going to take Joe Burrow there. I do think he has a calmness. He has a confidence. I like the way he throws the ball. I mean, my eyes just tell me the kid's going to make it. He's going to make, I don't know the level, but I compared him when he was a college quarterback. I said he feels like Tony Romo a little bit to me. He can move. He can throw. He plays with confidence. You know, I'm not sure. Maybe he's a little better natural thrower, but what do you make of Burrow?
Well, you got good eyes, Colin, probably better than mine because I'm wearing glasses. But he's very refined. He's one of those guys that came into the league with a pretty refined sense of timing and rhythm in the pass game. The ball comes out. And I'll tell you what, he's throwing the ball with a little more juice this year.
Yeah.
You know, he'll never be a power thrower. He'll never be Matthew Stafford. But he's throwing the ball with a little more juice this year, and that shows up on tape. and he has a sense of being able to read and go through progressions. And they have a lot of weapons. And that leads us, of course, to the play that we wanted to show this week, which was a touchdown pass he threw to Ja'Marr Chase from a week ago. Yeah. So we can take a look at that play, which, you know, for a lot of people just saw the play, it just looked like an easy touchdown. But there was an interesting part to this play. And what happened on this play essentially was this was four receivers were going to work to one side of the field, the boundary side of the formation. And that was what the initial read was. And the Steelers were playing cover one. That means they had a single high safety, and they were playing man-to-man on all five receivers. So as this play begins, what happens is Burrow is looking to his left. That's the boundary side of the formation. There's four receivers there. That was the initial progression read. He didn't have anything. What did he have on the backside? He had Ja'Marr Chase working one-on-one against Joe Hayden. And actually, Chase makes an unbelievable move on his route. This is beautiful route running by Chase. Now, obviously, the protection is critical here because you need time to work one side of the field, come back to the other. You could see him look left, nothing there, knows he has Chase one-on-one versus Hayden, comes back to it, easy throw, touchdown. And the one thing that really stood out to me on this play as well as Burrow was watch Ja'Marr Chase. Look at him beat a veteran quality corner with nuanced, detailed route running. Really good. He got Hayden turned around, and he's wide open. So this is an offense that's going to keep getting better and better, Colin, because they've got personnel. If their O-line can be solid, and by the way, I think Burrow is the kind of quarterback that can help an O-line with his sense of timing and refinement in the pocket.
Yeah, I like to watch him play. That's the best compliment I can give a quarterback. I like watching. He's a craftsman. He's got some real skills here. He's got good feet. He moves. I mean, he's fun to watch play.
I agree.
Yeah. And at times he makes it look really easy when he gets some decent protection. So, Greg Cosell, 42 years, NFL film. So much good stuff today. Thank you, as always, Greg.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.